Good morning, and welcome to Atlanta Business Radio. I am Amy Otto, and I'm joined by Lee Cantor today and two wonderful guests. I don't know that we can fit it all in 30 minutes, Lee.
I know. This is going to be tough.
And I have to actually get out of here by 1 o'clock today, and we've got so much to talk about. Can we make it 30 minutes?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. We're joined today by Dr. Kathleen Hall and Christy Andrews. But before we get started, Lee, anything new going on with you?
Next week's our big networking event.
Fast Pitch, yes, Wednesday evening at Brio from 5 to 7.
At Perimeter.
Yes, Brio at Perimeter. We need to make sure we're specific on the location, right?
Yes, you know what happens last time.
Yeah, there's two Eclipse de Lunas, and we had some lost folks, but this time we won't make that mistake. So I went to a dude ranch over the weekend.
I know, you like that.
I love that. My fanny's still a little bit sore, but I'm working through it. But we had a blast.
So that was bonding, family fun?
Daughter's 12th birthday, yes. Definitely bonding fun. I think I belong in a barn.
Good. That'll work well with our guests.
That's my comfort zone. Yes, it will. It definitely will. So without further ado, Dr. Kathleen Hall, she's internationally recognized. I'm very privileged to announce that she's here. She's been on The Oprah Show. She's been on ABC News, CNN, The Today Show. And now she's on the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Lee.
It's a logical step for her in her growth as a media personality.
Wow. A lot to talk about today. Kathleen, Dr. Hall, please let us know what it is you do. We want to know all about the Stress Institute. Why don't we start with what's the last book you wrote?
The last book I wrote was called A Life in Balance, Nourishing the Four Roots of True Happiness.
And that is number what?
That's number two. That's only number two.
Okay.
I have two more. Yeah, I have two more out next year.
And tell us about the Stress Institute.
The Stress Institute grew out of my fascination with stress. I started out as a Wall Street broker and money manager, then went on to venture capital. And I noticed when I was working on the 104th floor of the World Trade Center that everybody seemed to handle stress differently. Some people would drink it away. Some people went through serial relationships. Some people gambled. And some people became very successful and very wise and very rich mentally, spiritually, and physically. So I was fascinated with different people's responses to stress. Then Bill Moyer did a series called Healing in the Mind in the early 90s. And he talked about the mind-body connection, and he was looking at cancer. He was looking at heart disease and hypertension. And I said, my gosh, this is fascinating. And I thought it was the future. I said, in the future, I think that stress is really going to be something we need to be talking about and investigating. I happen to be married to a scientist and live in a scientific community, so it just became a love affair with stress, my own struggle with stress. At that point, I was having some PTSD and panic attacks myself and had to ask myself, did I want to go on long-term medication? Did I want to continue to try to placate it with my Johnny Walker black that had turned to Johnny Walker red that had turned to shots of Stoli's? And I had two beautiful children and a husband. So I really, Amy, stopped my life and said, you know, I keep thinking that if I made a lot of money, then I wouldn't be stressed. Then if I had my two beautiful children and married a wonderful man, then I wouldn't be stressed. Then if I bought my new red car and my new fur or whatever, I wouldn't be stressed. And then if I had an office on the 104th floor. Mm-hmm. So what it was like feeding a tiger. Mm-hmm. I kept feeding it and feeding it and said, nah, I got to stop. So anyway, that's what happened to me. And it's been a love odyssey with stress. Stress is the driver of most diseases. I got fascinated with cancer and my cancer patients that I fell in love with and their families, and heart disease. So what I saw as a phenomenon, I saw it like, think of a wheel in the hub in the middle with the spokes. So I saw the spokes of whether you had cancer, heart disease, my at-risk violent inner city kids, CEOs of corporation. I saw stress and how people handled it. And at that point, we hadn't unraveled the genome. Mm-hmm. So we were assuming that some of it was in their genes, some of it's DNA predisposed, and some of it's environmental. And I just left a conference with the Dalai Lama last two weekends ago and spent 8 hours with the seminal, the most amazing neuroscientists in the field of stress and depression in the world. And so all day long, that's what we talked about was the One-third of your stress response and depression is in your DNA, and two-thirds is environmental.
Wow. So
two-thirds. It's really important, yeah. And especially when we deal with diseases like cancer, which a lot of it is an immune phenomenology, and DNA-based, you know, it's in our gene pool. So it's a wonderful time to be talking about this.
Now, Kathleen, you went from, you know, super high-charged, you know, financial world into now having a stress institute and doing a lot of research in that area. Can you take us through your day of how you manage stress?
Oh, absolutely. What I learned was I was very privileged. I got to train at Harvard and all these amazing places about stress and cardiovascular disease and cancer. And they were using the same four-quadrant program in the medical model. So what I did was I created an acronym, and I started using it with my patients and clients, and it's called self-care, and I do it myself, absolutely. I'm one of those people, I do what I say what I do.
Right, so you said you use your institute as kind of a petri dish.
Absolutely,
it's a petri dish. A lot of experimentation.
Sure, because I started with cardiovascular patients, then I brought up cancer patients, then brought up CEOs, then mm-hmm. at-risk kids. So it's called self-care, it's an acronym. S is for serenity, which is the opposite of stress. So when you say serenity, what we know is that people that practice serenity practices, whether it's being silent and doing a short meditation, doing affirmations, listening to wonderful music you love, what we know is their blood pressure goes down, their heart rate goes down, and they get an immune response. So S is serenity. Every day of my life, I meditate at least 20 to 30 minutes a day.
Deep breathing, is that?
Deep breathing, exactly. Clearing the mind. And a lot of the patients I work with, though, and especially a lot of CEOs or type A's, they really have a problem getting quiet. And that's where I learned how to get creative, whether it was a sound machine where you can hear waves if they like the oceans or if they liked birds. You know, that a lot of people are terrified of the silence because, in fact, something happened to them in the silence lots of times. Mm-hmm. And so we're taught to not trust the silence. So S is serenity, E is exercise. We know that your immune system gets better when you exercise. If you just exercise 3 times a week, it reduces your risk of death from all diseases by a third and your risk of Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. So exercise. But now I've added on to that brain exercise. We need to keep this brain moving and exercising. The brain starts shrinking earlier than we thought, actually in your late 20s. Also, your dopamine production starts a reduction of at least 15% before you're 40. So we need to keep moving those brain, that's brain exercise. And L is love. We know that people are connected in community and groups, which is what this wonderful wellness community is all about. We know that they, lots of times their immune system changes. We look at their fMRIs. We look at their brains. When you have a connection with other people, mm-hmm. it changes your health outcomes.
Now, does that necessarily, I'm going to stop you at that, does that necessarily have to be a person? We talked before the show about love and love for pets. I mean, that sense of love doesn't necessarily even have to be with a person, right?
I love that you said that, Amy. Absolutely. I have some people that are so damaged from relationships, and not just rapes, but a horrible marriage, a horrible job situation, that they've actually gone through such psychic trauma that if I can get them a cat or a dog, you're right, exactly, something to touch and to love and communicate with. And so L is love, S-E-L, and F is food. We know food is healing, food is medicine. And what I learned about staying with Aboriginal tribes and different communities and cultures, they, not unlike us in the West, never separated food from being medicine and healing. Mm-hmm. So we know like omega-3 fatty acids. We know that we have a study from the University of Pennsylvania with chronic pain patients. They've taken two-thirds of their patients off of pain medications when they increase omega-3 fatty acids.
Like naturally or through supplementation?
It's through supplementation and eating fish both. Mm-hmm. We know it's great for depression, stress, all kinds of things we're finding out. So we know food is a huge source. We're calling blueberries brain berries. Mm-hmm. They actually grow neurons and neural connections. We know about B6s and serotonin and what it does to the brain and the body. We can actually see it in real time, putting ports in people and looking at brain scans. So it's an exciting time. So I ask people whether they have cancer, heart disease. My inner city children, I ask them to practice SELF care. So I do it every day. S is serenity, which is my meditations, and E is exercise. I do yoga and actually walk my dogs at least 45 minutes a day, mm-hmm. and we rescue animals. L is love. I have in my speed dial, in my text, if I'm having a rough day, and I do struggle with depression myself. It's genetic, absolutely, totally genetic. My mother has a pretty significant case. So I definitely have my husband, two friends.
Depression isn't one-third, two-thirds, genetic and environmental?
There were several MD PhDs there at this meeting, and they said it was a third. Some researchers are saying 50%. Mm-hmm. I think Marty Seligman, who studies happiness and does all the research, he's saying 50-50.
What do you think?
I think it's at least 50%, and I think it does. I think it kicks in at different stages. I've seen people that were happy-go-lucky cheerleaders and married, and I think that it's very interesting. We're seeing that, especially with women, the onset of a lot of psychiatric disease, being bipolar, borderline personality, schizophrenia, starts in their 20s. Mm-hmm. It actually gets more aggressive in their 20s. So those of us that have females, too, that's something to watch and be careful of. Let me throw in something really quickly that the Dalai Lama talked about. This is very fascinating. The researchers talked about 30,000 people in America commit suicide every year. 20,000 are victims of homicide, and 10,000 die of AIDS. So it's growing.
Wow.
And in 1960, the onset of depression, now remember, this is driven by stress, and here we're talking about cancer and other diseases driven by stress and depression. In 1960, the average age of onset of depression was 55 years old. In 2007, the average age of the onset of clinical depression is 24 years old.
Wow.
That's so amazing. We can't separate out cancer, heart disease. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a phenomenology. Depression and stress, it's the number one disability in the world now, not just the West. So it's pretty fascinating, and it's something for us to all be talking about because of our children, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
The depression component, I always thought for women so much of that was hormonal. And now a lot of the studies are saying it's not. Can you shed some light on that?
Absolutely. No, women are working. Men lots of times are working one full-time job. They leave in the morning, they work, and they come home, and then they take off their shoes and watch ESPN or whatever at night. I'm not being mean, but that's a traditional, and that's most.
Right.
Whether we have an equal parenting household, I'm sure you do too, but most people don't. And what we find out, and we've got Stanford studies that show this, our cortisol level goes up in the morning, it's supposed to, and then it decreases during the day. What we're seeing out there in lots of research is that women's hormone level, cortisol production, picks back up at 6 or 7 o'clock. And it's because we are training ourselves to have our second full-time job, put the meal on the table, do homework, take care of the house. And what we're showing is they're showing some, I don't know if you're familiar with this, Christy, they're showing some metastatic breast cancer studies at Stanford about women and elevated cortisol levels. It's very interesting. And seeing what their lifestyle is and was before the diagnosis and after, and then continually which ones can actually go into remission and not. So there's all kinds of things that we women have to see this as a plague.
So men's cortisol levels don't increase at 6 o'clock?
No. As a matter of fact, we have a study here in Atlanta. They took two employees, I think it was WSB, and they had the exact same commute, an hour and 15 minutes, male, female. They left the house and they swabbed the cortisol in their saliva. It was 0.267 on the male and the female. By the time they got to work, the man's was 0.267. Mm-hmm. The woman's was 1.678.
Wow.
Horrific levels. So they, you know, said, "What did you do on your commute?" Well, she did what all of us moms do. Made dental appointments, exactly.
Right,
checked on the babysitter. Is the dog at the vet? Right. I mean, talk to your assistant, which I do. And then they asked the guy what he did. And you know, my husband is a physician and a scientist. And he understood exactly. He said, don't tell me what the guy did. I know what he did. He did what I do. I said, "What's that, honey?" "Well, you listen to the sports, you know, stories. Then I turn to Financial News Network and see how my stocks did. And then I blah, blah, blah." I said, "You mean you never once think about the kids or me? Are you kidding?"
Right.
So I you get it? Mm-hmm. We're killing ourselves, guys. And then here's the problem. She gets there with that cortisol level that high. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea how long it takes her to reduce that?
Wow.
She's going to be more aggressive. She's not going to be creative. What that does to the immune
system.
Right.
She has the stress of the job on top of that. So it's not like that's going to lower it.
Yeah, the commute, especially. We're here in Atlanta.
Right.
Did you know 1 in 12 heart attacks is directly related to your commute? And we have a recent study that shows that a person who commutes 1 hour experiences as much stress as a fighter pilot in battle.
Wow.
This is some serious stuff we have to start looking at. Mm-hmm. And we looked at some telomere studies of DNA, and actually an hour commute can after 18 months can take 10 to 12 years off your life. It reduces your life expectancy. So we've, you know, got to talk about this. And I think that we need to talk to MARTA and them and get some, you know, we need to get some, you know, mass transit here, guys.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And Lee, you're so smart. Your office is how far away from the studio?
2 minutes. Just I strategically placed it, you know, minutes away from my
office. 2 minutes. So, Kathleen, how do people know when stress is an issue for them? What are some of the signs?
I say there's three areas. Look at the psychological, the physical, and look at your relational symptoms. The psychological symptoms will be aggression, anger, fear, you know. And again, trust your coworkers, trust friends, trust your spouse and your children, that when they say you're being short, you're being angry, Or you're acting depressed. You have a flat affect. Nothing bothers you anymore. So psychological, physically, your heart rate will increase. You'll feel your heart racing. You may start getting panic attacks. Your hands may start getting cold and clammy. GI symptoms are one of the first. Mm-hmm. My husband happens to be a gastroenterologist. It's huge. Another one is headaches. It's very common. Mm-hmm. Backaches. And then relational symptoms. Are you seeing your spouse or someone you love, your child, withdraw to their bedroom, withdraw from social situations? Or the reverse, are you seeing them be very aggressive, mm-hmm. and fight with people at work, fight at home, not want to see the kids? So those are the areas, physical, and divide them in your head, physical, psychological, or relational. And observe your children, the people you love, because you can help them and yourself.
I know a lot of people miss work because of stress. That's one of the number one reasons why people miss work. It's because they're stressed or sick. What would you say to an employer? How do you implement programs with employers to help increase the healthiness of their employees and reduce the stress?
Well, the reason that they stay out of work because they're stressed is they're literally almost in a panic state. And whether it's an active panic state, like your heart rate up, your blood pressure up, or the reverse, they get almost depressed, like grab your blankie, suck your thumb, I can't go to work, is that they feel like it's them and you don't understand them. The employer does not understand them, that there's not this trusted relationship, and there's not education, mm-hmm. that they think they can't figure out whether it's the job. What we're seeing is people, Amy, doing serial jobs. They'll leave Aflac and go to Gulf States Insurance or go to, and they mm-hmm. don't, the first employer doesn't stop to give them stress education, depression mm-hmm. education, and say, we're here for you. We understand this is a phenomenon. We're looking at our drug costs with SSRIs.
Right,
exactly,
absolutely.
With sleeping pills. You know this. Mm-hmm. Cholesterol is driven by stress. So all of the pharmacology bills, and they're going, you know, we're going to provide stress education and depression, mm-hmm. and we're going to do some kind of programs here. And you know what? We want you to be a part of it. Tell us if this is working for you. Bring them into the problem. And say, we really want to talk about this. 20 of you have stayed out of work for X amount of time. Would you be part of a little study we want to do?
So in other words, a person that's eating lunch at their desk because they're being, think in their mind, they're being so productive, they're really not helping the situation at all. They need to get away from it. And in order to reduce stress, there are things that an employer could provide.
Absolutely. I just did Fox Business News, their new network they just launched. Last week, and when I was doing the television show, what I was on about was a new study we have about people that eat at their desks for lunch. They're actually less productive. Hmm. They're exhausted. They get more stressed, and they have higher rate of depression. Exactly, hmm. You're right. Wow. So what I say is, it's very simple. It's not, you don't have to spend a lot of money, and you people that have small businesses. S is serenity. We were meant to play and rest. Look at your animals. Mm-hmm. So 5 minutes in the morning, since that's your more uptime, have people do a 5-minute meditation. Just have them put a sign on their door saying, it's my 5 minutes, and it's cute. Have them make their own little sign, close their office door. 5 minutes in the afternoon, let them play. And if they want to throw a Nerf basketball, go online and play a casual game for 5 minutes. If they want to do a headstand, that's their business. Meditation, serenity time in the morning, 5 minutes. Play time in the afternoon for 5 minutes. That's your S and your exercise. Okay, here we go with self-care. And then don't forget exercise. That have them walk around the building at lunch for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Add 10 minutes onto their lunch. Or go up, if you live on the fourth floor, go up and down just 10 minutes. We know now, new studies are showing us, 10 minutes of cardiovascular exercise have the same efficacy in short bursts as a 30-minute sustainable one.
Right.
So be creative. Also, once a week, tell them to go out to lunch and plan a 10-minute walk on the way to lunch, 10-minute back. Okay, that's 20 minutes. Eat some, get a little health menu, like have blueberries, white fish. Do you see spinach, which is loaded with
bees? Well, people are having meetings on the go, like walking meetings. Like, why have a meeting?
Think about it as a stress-reducing lunch. Exactly.
Brainstorm while walking around the block. You know, you don't have to be in a conference
room. I talked to somebody, I don't know if it was CNN or whatever, and a couple weeks ago, and they were interviewing me, and we were talking about a company where they actually play so much that 1 month the guys decorate the bathroom, the restroom, and the next month the girls do. Then the next week they do something with the walls, and then the next week. So it's like constant. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
And they can't get rid of people. They have employees that are so sustainable, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
People want a family at work. They want to know
that
people care.
Right. Everybody's connected, and everybody's looking out for each other.
Mm-hmm. I think we need a group hug before we introduce Christy. I couldn't agree with you more, though. I mean, it's so important to have fun at work, and I'm the self, the S-E-L-F. I mean, that
will
really...
Write that down, Amy?
Oh, I absolutely wrote it down, Lee, and I'll remember it, and I'll practice it. I probably do in some ways already, but having the acronym definitely helps.
And I think I sent you that book, A Life in Balance.
Yes,
it's okay.
Yes.
S-E-L-F is in there.
Yes, thank you.
And my next book is going to be more on a workbook on how to do it easy, simple. Busy, busy people today.
I know. And society, I think technology really has led to us being more busy. You feel like you have to multitask, and there's more information coming at you from so many more areas than before. I would love to introduce Christy Andrews. You were talking about stress, and some stress is self-induced, I know, and some is not, and some is environmental. But oftentimes the stress involved with cancer is something that people don't understand, and they don't know where to go for the resources, whether it's educational for the patient or for their caregiver. And there's a community called the Wellness Community in Atlanta that I found out about, and I want others to know about as well. So welcome to the show, Christy Andrews.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Christy, tell us a little bit about the Wellness Community and how they help cancer patients.
Well, we are celebrating our 10th anniversary this year. We have a wonderful facility right across from Northside Hospital. And all the programs, I want to point out, everything that we offer is free. And it's all based on really the same things that the doctor here has been speaking about, which is just introducing ways that people can just look inside themselves and reduce stress in their life and really just try to become educated after a diagnosis and interact with others after a diagnosis and really turn to support groups to try to reduce the stress in their lives. And it's a wonderful organization with all kinds of programs.
Can you talk a little bit about the patient active concept?
Absolutely. Dr. Harold Benjamin, who founded the national organization 25 years ago, actually, had a really, at the time, cutting-edge philosophy that if someone who has been diagnosed with cancer takes a very active approach in their treatment, that their quality of life will be impacted, and there's the potential that they could possibly live longer. And that's becoming educated. That's exercising. That is really becoming an advocate for yourself after a diagnosis. And again, that was really cutting edge 25 years ago. And today we're sitting around talking about all these studies that really support what he knew 25 years ago. And, you know, there's, I think a lot of us still look to physicians as, you know, they provide the information to us and we want to take that information and kind of go. But the fact is you have to ask questions. You have to be an advocate for yourself. And so what the Wellness Community offers, one of the things that we offer is educational opportunities where people can come and talk to other people. Maybe they're intimidated by questioning their physician, but and not questioning the validity of what they're telling the patient, but actually, you know, walking away from their appointment and thinking, wait, I need more information than that.
Right.
And so we bring specialists in from all over the Atlanta community that can really talk about different programs. We have a wonderful physician from Northside Hospital coming in on the 16th, Dr. Lassane, who is going to be talking about new advances in cancer. And so, you know, 25 years ago, no one looked to programs like this. And now every physician really says you need to be an advocate for yourself and really maybe could go visit the Wellness Community.
And it also allows an outlet for people that are going through the same disease state to share with one another. Tell us a little bit about your exercise program.
Oh, we have a wonderful exercise program. We have Tai Chi. We have yoga. We have, I think a very important part of what we offer is our social activities that bring people together. You talked earlier about, boosting immune systems. And, it's just such an important part of the overall treatment. And this is really in addition to a traditional treatment. This is not something that we say, oh, come to us instead of your traditional treatments. This is something to add in. And what we kind of say is the physician's going to treat the body and we'll kind of help with everything else.
Now, another part of what you guys provide is for the families of the person that's going through cancer, isn't that right?
Absolutely.
Don't you do something with the children?
Yes, and I'm so glad that you pointed that out. I think that's such an important part of our program. The Kids Circle is what we call that. And, you know, for a child whose parent or grandparent has been diagnosed, it's such a frightening time. And, you know, I think as parents, we often want to protect our kids and not talk. But, you know, kids are smart and they have questions and they're feeling the stress, the impact of that in their own lives. And so the Kids Circle is a program where we bring the kids into one room, the parents into another room, and offer kind of play therapy. What we find is the first time that the parents invite their kids to come, the kids don't want to go and they don't want to go. And the second week of the program, they can't, you know, they can't wait to get in the car and come over. So it makes a really big impact on the kids.
It makes it like a safe place for them to kind of deal with these emotions that they're going through.
Exactly. And I think one of the important aspects that we've recently added into the kids circle is we have the children just ask the questions. You know, the facilitators say, you know, tell us some of the things that you're feeling or some of the things that you wonder that maybe you can't talk to your parents about. And we write those questions down, and then we share them with the parents. The parents don't know what child asked what, but it's a really good tool for the parents to understand, you know, your kids are thinking about this, and you need to address it.
Right. Well, I'm sure.
Now, Kathleen, a lot of the wellness community talks about is stuff that it seems that is very congruent with what you talk about.
Absolutely. That's why in the 90s when Bill Moyer did this, the early 90s, the wellness community was there also, even though it wasn't featured in that special, they were doing the same four quadrants, group support, exercise, mm-hmm. all the things you're talking about at all the big research institutions. But, you know, it's really important, Christy, what you said. My spouse is a physician. My daughter is a physician. And people get mad at them because when they're diagnosed or whatever's going on, that why don't you know this? You know, guys, we have to realize that physicians nowadays are under a lot of pressure. I mean, there's a blame physician thing going on.
It's a different world.
And let me tell you, when you're a subspecialist in gastroenterology or pulmonology or critical care, whatever, there is so much knowledge to know in that area. They can't know everything like I know about stress. You know what I mean? Or everything you specifically know about cancer.
Right.
So that's why we're all in this together. And I love what you said about the mutual support. So don't, you know, so this is about all of us working together on a problem. And physicians almost feel inadequate and stressed themselves because they really, they're there. They're physicians. They want to help people.
Right.
But they can't know everything. So don't get mad at them. And I mean, you know what I mean? We see people physician hop too because they're like, oh, you did it. No, that's what resources like the wellness community and the Stress Institute, that we can all help each other because we just like they specialize. You're specializing in cancer. I'm specializing in stress and depression and mindful living practices is what we talk about also. So I think, you know what I mean? It takes a village and it does.
Absolutely.
Are you finding that doctors are open to this? Because, you know, doctors sometimes think that they do know everything in their specialty and don't relate well to the patient or don't seem to have patience.
You know, Lee, that's true. And if they don't, then don't go to that doctor. Mm-hmm. I really mean it because there is so much science emerging, whether it's certain kinds of exercise with certain kinds of diseases, eating for your disease. If you have arthritis, we know a lot about eating hot, spicy foods and endorphins and dead. So you can almost eat for your disease now. But the point is they're not nutritionists, bless their hearts.
Right.
But if they're not on this, you know, integrative, complementary, blended, whatever they want to call this kind of medicine, you need to change because it'll be a fight.
That's changed? Don't you think that that's evolving?
Absolutely. But there are still some old school people.
Sure.
Yeah, you
sure.
know that. Very few, I think. But like my daughter said, where she is, it's probably still 50-50. There's still, I don't want to say good old boy, but remember, women have only been in medical schools in a half-half recently.
Well, it's interesting because our former board chair, who sadly recently passed away, was a physician, a very renowned physician. And one of the things that he thought was so important about the wellness community is he would say, you know, physicians need to refer people here because we make them look better.
Absolutely.
You know, the impact that we make on their lives, on these patients' lives, really does make the physicians.
And Christy, I love what you're saying because what we need to do, instead of physicians being threatened by this new information, they need to see, whew, it's off me, so I can be a better gastroenterologist, a better oncologist.
Yes.
I can be, you know what I mean?
Patients' lives are going to be improved.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right. I just went through something with my mother who had cancer recently, and she had like 11 physicians working on her. And what's being done to help them all kind of stay on the same page?
I think now they even have coordinators, don't they, Christy, where you can even hire a...
Well, and each facility is different. Mm-hmm. I know that, you know, again, they're all different, so I don't know that I can answer that as a...
But also, it almost, if you have the cancer and you have 12 doctors, you're either going to need a spouse, a child, a friend, somebody to coordinate this for you because
that's
you
what we
cannot
found, that the,
do it.
The family member had to really take the ball and be the point person to kind of make sure, because it's like you said, Christy, earlier, I mean, ultimately, it's your problem. You know, you're the one who has to deal with it.
Well, we
have
to
facilitate it.
We have a participant who lost his wife to cancer, but when she was diagnosed, every time he would go to a different physician, he had a tape recorder, and he said that he would ask the physician at the beginning of the meeting, do you mind if I tape this? And he said if he ever had any physician physician say, no, I don't want you to tape it. He found a different doctor because he said that, you know, he had to, again, he had to be an advocate for his wife. And there was so much information coming at him that he would go home, review the tapes, and make sure that all the other physicians
were on the same page.
Right.
Right. That, that was one of the big challenges that we as a family had to go through. And it's good to see that with your wellness community that you're kind of addressing that a little bit.
Absolutely. I can't believe we're running out of time. Dr. Hall, what's the best way for someone to reach you and to learn more about the Stress Institute?
They can just go to stressinstitute.com. Very simple. Type in stressinstitute.com. We have lots of free information, so you can print out anything, download. And we are changing our website in the next month. It's going to be streaming, so we're actually going to have little classes on there. I'll be talking to you with a Thanksgiving message and Christmas tips and all kinds of things. So we're going to be interactive.
Wonderful. I can't wait to look at the brain exercises. I saw that component. Christy, how about you? How can people reach you?
Well, we also have a website, www.thewellnesscommunity-atlanta.org. And again, we're right across the street from Northside Hospital. Anyone who's been affected by a cancer diagnosis can come, not just the patient, the family members, a caregiver. We even have grief groups. So if someone's lost a loved one, they're welcome too.
Wow.
Man, just flew by. You were right, Amy.
That was the quickest 30 minutes ever. Both of you, thank you so much, Christy and Kathleen, for being our guests
today. It was a privilege. Thank you.
On the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Until next week, I'm Amy Otto with Lee Cantor, and we hope you have a wonderful day.